Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1. Epidemiology of Pediatric Critical Care Admissions in 43 United States Children's Hospitals from 2014 to 2019 by Julia A. Hennigan et al. Objectives. To identify trends in the population of patients in PICUs over time. Design, cross-sectional retrospective cohort study using the Pediatric Health Information System database. Setting, 43 U.S. Children's Hospitals. Patients, all patients admitted to Pediatric Health Information System participating hospitals from January 2014 to December 2019. Individuals greater than 65 years old and normal newborns were excluded. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. PICU care occurred in 13.8% of all pediatric hospital encounters and increased over the study period from 13.3% to 14.3%. Resource intensity based on average hospitalization resource intensity scores for kids score increased significantly across epochs, 6.5 in 2014 to 2015 versus 6.9 in 2018 to 2019 with a p-value less than 0.001, although this was not consistently manifested as additional procedural exposure. Geometric mean PICU cost per patient encounter was stable. The two most common disease categories in PICU patients were respiratory failure and cardiac and circulatory congenital anomalies. Of all PICU encounters, 35.5% involved mechanical ventilation and 25.9% involved vasoactive infusions. Hospital-level variation in the percentage of days spent in the PICU ranged from 15.1% to 63.5% across the participating sites. Of the total hospital costs for patients admitted to the PICU, 41.7% of costs were accrued during the patient's PICU stay. Conclusions. The proportional use of PICU beds is increasing over time, although was variable across centers. Case-based resource use and complexity of pediatric patients are also increasing. Despite the higher use of PICU resources, the standardized costs of PICU care per patient encounter have remained stable. These data may help to inform current PICU resource allocation and future PICU capacity planning. Abstract 2. Prevalence of cardiac dysfunction in Malawian children with severe febrile illness by Rachel Bensman et al. The objectives were to investigate the prevalence of left ventricular systolic dysfunction in Malawian children with severe febrile illness and to explore associations between left ventricular systolic dysfunction and mortality and lactate levels. Design, prospective observational study. Setting, pediatric ward of a tertiary government referral hospital in Malawi. Patients, children between 60 days and 10 years old with severe febrile illness were enrolled at admission from October 2017 to February 2018. Severe febrile illness was defined as fever with at least one sign of impaired perfusion plus altered mentation or respiratory distress. Interventions, focused cardiac ultrasound referred to as FOCUS was performed and serum lactate was measured for each child at enrollment with repeat focused cardiac ultrasound the following day. Left ventricular systolic function was later categorized as normal, reduced, severely reduced, or hyperdynamic by two pediatric cardiologists blinded to clinical course and outcomes. Measurements and main results. 54 children were enrolled. Left ventricular systolic dysfunction was present in 14 children, or 25.9%, with a 95% confidence interval of 15.4 to 40.3, of whom 3 had severely reduced function. 30 patients, or 60%, had a lactate greater than 2.5 millimoles per liter, of which 20, or 40%, were markedly elevated over 5 millimoles per liter. 10 children, or 18.5%, died during admission. Of children who survived, 22.7% had decreased left ventricular systolic function versus 40% of those who died. Dysfunction was not associated with mortality or elevated lactate. Conclusions. Cardiac dysfunction may be present in 1 in 4 Malawian children with severe febrile illness, and mortality in these patients is especially high. Larger studies are needed to further clarify the role cardiac dysfunction plays in mortality and integrate practical bedside assessments for decision support around individualized resuscitation strategies. Abstract 3. A clinical and physiological prospective observational study on the management of pediatric shock in the post-fluid expansion as supportive therapy trial era by Chifatso Obonyo et al. Objectives. fluid bolus resuscitation in African children is harmful. Little research has evaluated physiologic effects of maintenance-only fluid strategy. Design. We describe the efficacy of fluid conservative resuscitation of septic shock using case fatality, hemodynamic, and myocardial function endpoints. Setting. Pediatric wards of Mbale Regional Referral Hospital, Uganda, and Kilifi County Hospital, Kenya, conducted between October 2013 and July 2015. Data were analyzed from August 2016 to July 2019. Patients. Children greater than or equal to 60 days old to less than or equal to 12 years old with severe febrile illness and clinical signs of impaired perfusion. Interventions. IV maintenance fluid was run at 4 milliliters per kilogram per hour unless children had greater than or equal to 3 signs of shock as defined by the World Health Organization, where they received 2 fluid boluses of 20 milliliters per kilogram and transfusion if shock persisted. Clinical, electrocardiographic, echocardiographic, and laboratory data were collected at presentation, during resuscitation, and on day 28. Outcome measures were 48-hour mortality, normalization of hemodynamics, and cardiac biomarkers. Measurements and main results. 30 children, 70% males, were recruited. 6 had shock as defined by the World Health Organization, or WHO, all of whom died, versus 3 of 24 in the non-WHO shock who died. Median measurements and main results. 30 children, 70% males, were recruited. 6 had shock as defined by the World Health Organization, or WHO, all of whom died, whereas 3 of 24 in the non-WHO shock group died. Median fluid volume received by survivors and non-survivors were similar, with 13 milliliters per kilogram in an interquartile range of 9 to 32 in the survivors versus 30 milliliters per kilogram with an interquartile range of 20 to 61 milliliters per kilogram in the non-survivors with a Z-value of 1.62 and a p-value of 0.23. By 24 hours, we observed increases in median stroke volume index from 39 milliliters per meter squared with an interquartile range of 32 to 42 milliliters per meter squared to a stroke volume index of 47 milliliters per meter squared with an interquartile range of 41 to 49 milliliters per meter squared and a measure of systolic function. Fractional shortening from 30 with an interquartile range of 27 to 33 to 34 with an interquartile range of 31 to 38 from baseline, including children managed with no bolus. Children with WHO shock had a higher mean level of cardiac troponin and alpha atrial natriuretic peptide at admission compared with non-WHO shock. The T-value for cardiac troponin was 3.58 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.24 to 1.43 and a p-value of 0.02, and the T-value for alpha atrial natriuretic peptide was 16.5 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.8 to 67.5 and a p-value of less than 0.01. Elevated troponin greater than 0.1 micrograms per milliliter and hyperlactatemia greater than 4 millimoles per liter were putative markers predicting outcome. Conclusions. Maintenance-only fluid therapy normalized clinical and myocardial perturbations in shock without compromising cardiac or hemodynamic function, whereas fluid bolus management of WHO shock resulted in high fatality. Troponin and lactate biomarkers of cardiac dysfunction could be promising outcome predictors in pediatric septic shock in resource-limited settings. Abstract 4. Development and external validation of a machine learning model for prediction of potential transfer to the PICU by Anoop Mayampurath et al. Objectives. Unrecognized clinical deterioration during illness requiring hospitalization is associated with high risk of mortality and long-term morbidity among children. Our objective was to develop and externally validate machine learning algorithms using electronic health records for identifying ICU transfer within 12 hours indicative of a child's condition. Design, observational cohort study, setting, 2 urban tertiary care academic hospitals listed as sites 1 and 2. Patients included pediatric inpatients less than 18 years old. There were no interventions. Measurement and main results. Our primary outcome was direct ward to ICU transfer. Using age, vital signs, and laboratory results, we derived logistic regression with regularization, restricted cubic spline regression, random forest, and gradient boosted machine learning models. among 50,830 admissions at Site 1 and 88,970 admissions at Site 2, 1,993 or 3.92% and 2,317 or 2.6% experienced the primary outcome, respectively. Site 1 data were split longitudinally into derivation from 2009 to 2017 and validation from 2018 to 2019, whereas Site 2 constituted the external test cohort. Across both sites, the gradient boosted machine was the most accurate model and outperformed a modified version of the bedside pediatric early warning score that only used physiologic variables in terms of discrimination, sensitivity, specificity, and number needed to treat. The C statistic for Site 1 was 0.84 versus 0.71 with a p-value of less than 0.001, and for Site 2 was 0.80 versus 0.74 with a p-value of less than 0.001. Conclusions. We developed and externally validated a novel machine learning model that identifies ICU transfers in hospitalized children more accurately than current tools. Our model enables early detection of children at risk for deterioration, thereby creating opportunities for intervention and improvement in outcomes. Abstract 5, Epidemiology of Neonatal Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, a prospective multicenter international cohort study by Danielle DeLuca et al. Objectives, age-specific definitions for acute respiratory distress syndrome, ARDS, are available, including a specific definition for neonates, the Montreux definition. The epidemiology of neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome is unknown. The objective of this study was to describe the epidemiology, clinical course, treatment, and outcomes of neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome. Design, prospective international observational cohort study. Setting, 15 academic neonatal intensive care units. Patients, consecutive sample of neonates of any gestational age admitted to the participating sites who met the neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome Montreux definition criteria. Measurements and main results. Neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome was classified as direct or indirect, infectious or non-infectious, and perinatal, defined as less than or equal to 72 hours after birth or late in onset. Primary outcomes were 1. Survival at 30 days from diagnosis, 2. In-hospital survival, and 3. Extracorporeal membrane oxygenation or ECMO-free survival at 30 days from diagnosis. Secondary outcomes included respiratory complications and common neonatal extrapulmonary morbidities. A total of 239 neonates met criteria for the diagnosis of neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome. The median prevalence was 1.5% of neonatal intensive care unit admissions, with male-to-female ratio of 1.5. Respiratory treatments were similar across gestational ages. Direct neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome, or 51.5% of neonates, was more common in term neonates and the perinatal period. Indirect neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome was often triggered by an infection and was more common in preterm neonates. 30-day in-hospital and 30-day ECMO-free survival were 83.3%, 76.2%, and 79.5% respectively. Direct neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome was associated with better survival outcomes than indirect neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome. Direct and non-infectious neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome were associated with the poorest respiratory outcomes at 36 and 40 weeks postmenstrual age. Gestational age was not associated with any primary outcome on multivariate analyses. Conclusions. Prevalence and survival of neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome are similar to those of pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome. The neonatal acute respiratory distress syndrome subtypes used in the current definition may be associated with distinct clinical outcomes and a different distribution for term and preterm neonates. Abstract 6, School Closures in the United States and Severe Respiratory Illnesses in Children, a Normalized Nationwide Sample by Colin Rogerson et al. Objectives, to determine the association between nationwide school closures and prevalence of common admission diagnoses in the pediatric critical care unit. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, national database evaluation using the Virtual Pediatric Systems LLC database. Patients, all patients admitted to the PICU in 81 contributing hospitals in the United States. Measurements and main results. Diagnosis categories were determined for all 110,418 patients admitted during the 20-week study period in each year 2018, 2019, and 2020. Admission data were normalized relative to statewide school closure dates for each patient using geographic data. The before school closure epoch was defined as 8 weeks prior to school closure, and the after school closure epoch was defined as 12 weeks following school closure. For each diagnosis, admission ratios for each study day were calculated by dividing 2020 admissions by 2018 and 2019 admissions. The 10 most common diagnosis categories were examined. Significant changes in admission ratios were identified for bronchiolitis, pneumonia, and asthma. These changes occurred at 2, 8, and 35 days following school closure, respectively. PICU admissions decreased by 82% for bronchiolitis, 76% for pneumonia, and 76% for asthma. Non-respiratory diseases such as diabetic ketoacidosis, status epilepticus, traumatic injury, and poisoning and ingestion did not show significant changes following school closure. Conclusions: school closures are associated with a dramatic reduction in the prevalence of severe respiratory disease requiring PICU admission. School closures may be an effective tool to mitigate future pandemics, but should be balanced with potential academic, economic, mental health, and social consequences. Abstract 7, Trends in Time to Extubation for Pediatric Postoperative Cardiac Patients and Its Correlation with Changes in Clinical Outcomes, a Virtual PICU Database Study, by Rebecca Epstein et al. Objectives: mechanical ventilation is often used in children after cardiac surgery, but can impair hemodynamics and cause lung injury. Early extubation may improve ICU length of stay and survival. We aimed to describe trends in early extubation rates and evaluate if centers that more commonly practice early extubation have better severity-adjusted outcomes. Design: retrospective analysis was performed of admissions in the Virtual Pediatric Systems Database from 2009 to 2018. Early extubation was defined as patients extubated in the operating room or within 6 hours of PICU admission. Setting: PICUs participating in the VPS database. Patients: children in the VPS database who underwent cardiac surgery. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: among 69,739 subjects, 20% were neonates, 47% underwent early extubation, 5.3% failed extubation, and 2.5% died. Overall, early extubation rates did not change over the study period. Centers were placed in one of four groups based on their early extubation rate in lower complexity surgeries. Centers that most commonly used early extubation had more ICU free time among all patients in univariable analysis, with the lowest early extubation group having 23.8 days in an interquartile range of 18.2 to 25.9 days, and the highest early extubation group having 24.7 days, with an interquartile range of 20 to 26.2 days, and a p-value less than 0.001. After adjusting for center volume, sex, age, surgical complexity, and preoperative ICU admission, increasing center-level early extubation rates were not associated with more ICU-free days. Higher center-level early extubation rate was not associated with mortality in univariable or multivariable analysis, but was associated with decreased extubation failure rates, with the lowest early extubation group having a 6.4% failure rate and the highest early extubation group having a 3.6% failure rate, with a p-value of less than 0.001. Conclusions: in this large, multi-center database study, early extubation rates in postoperative cardiac patients did not significantly change between 2009 and 2018. Centers that performed early extubation more frequently did not have shorter ICU stays or difference in mortality rates, but did have lower reintubation rates. Abstract 8, Suboptimal Beta-Lactam Therapy in Critically Ill Children, Risk Factors and Outcome, by Tatiana Vanderhagen et al. Objectives: in critically ill children, severely altered pharmacokinetics may result in subtherapeutic beta-lactam antibiotic concentrations when standard pediatric dosing regimens are applied. However, it remains unclear how to recognize patients most at risk for suboptimal exposure and their outcome. This study had three aims: 1, to describe target attainment for beta-lactam antibiotics in critically ill children; 2, to identify risk factors for suboptimal exposure; and 3, to study the association between target non-attainment and clinical outcome. Design: post-hoc analysis of the antibiotic dosing in pediatric intensive care study. Steady-state trough plasma concentrations were classified as therapeutic if greater than or equal to the minimum inhibitory concentration of the suspected pathogen. Factors associated with the subtherapeutic concentrations and clinical outcome were identified by logistic regression analysis. Setting: the pediatric and cardiac surgery intensive care unit of a Belgian tertiary care hospital. Patients: 157 patients, aged 1 month old to 15 years old, treated with IV amoxicillin clavulanic acid, piperacillin tazobactam, or meropenem. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 382 trough concentrations were obtained from 157 patients with a median age of 1.25 years and an interquartile range of 0.4 to 4.2 years. Subtherapeutic concentrations were measured in 39 of 60 or 65% of patients who received amoxicillin clavulanic acid, 43 of 48 or 90% of patients who received piperacillin tazobactam, and 35 of 49 or 71% of patients who received meropenem. Estimates of glomerular filtration rate and the absence of vasopressor treatment were independently associated with target non-attainment. The estimated GFR had a 54% increase in odds for each standard deviation increase in value, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.287 to 0.736 and a p-value equal to 0.001. The absence of vasopressor treatment had 2.8-fold greater odds, with a 95% confidence interval of 1.079 to 7.253 and a p-value equal to 0.034. We failed to identify an association between antibiotic concentrations and clinical failure. Conclusions: subtherapeutic beta-lactam concentrations are common in critically ill children and correlate with renal function. Estimated GFR equations may be helpful in identifying patients who may require higher dosing. Future studies should focus on the impact of subtherapeutic concentrations on clinical outcomes. Abstract 9. Assessment of patient health-related quality of life and functional outcomes in pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome by Stephanie Ames et al. Objectives: to describe health-related quality of life and functional outcomes in pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome and to determine risk factors associated with poor outcome defined as death or severe reduction in health-related quality of life at 28 days or ICU discharge. Design: prospective multi-site cohort outcome study conducted between 2019 and 2020. Setting: 8 academic PICUs in the United States. Patients: children with acute respiratory distress syndrome based on standard criteria. Interventions: pediatric characteristics and illness severity were collected during PICU admission. Parent proxy report measurements were obtained at baseline, day 28 or ICU discharge, month 3, and month 9, utilizing pediatric quality of life inventory and functional status scale. A composite outcome evaluated using univariate and multivariate analysis was death or severe reduction in health-related quality of life, which was defined as over 25% reduction in the pediatric quality of life inventory at day 28 or ICU discharge. Measurements and main results: this study enrolled 122 patients with a median age of 3 years and an interquartile range of 1 to 12 years. Common etiologies of acute respiratory distress syndrome included pneumonia, N equals 63 or 52%, and sepsis, N equals 27 or 22%. At day 28 or ICU discharge, half of surviving patients with follow-up data, N equals 50 of 95 or 53%, reported a greater than 10% decrease in health-related quality of life from baseline, and approximately one-third of participants, N equals 19 of 61 or 31%, reported a greater than 10% decrease in health-related quality of life at 9 months. Trends in functional status scale were similar. Of 104 patients with data, 47 patients or 45% died or reported a severe decrease of greater than 25% in health-related quality of life at day 28 or ICU discharge. Older age was associated with an increased risk of death or severe reduction in health-related quality of life. Odds ratio was 1.08 and confidence interval was 1.01 to 1.16. In conclusion, children with acute respiratory distress syndrome are at risk for deterioration in health-related quality of life and functional status scale that persists up to 9 months after acute respiratory distress syndrome. Almost half of children with acute respiratory distress syndrome experience a poor outcome, including death or severe reduction in health-related quality of life at day 28 or ICU discharge. Abstract 10. Supraventricular tachycardia in infants with congenital diaphragmatic hernia: prevalence, associations, and outcomes by Joseph Tella et al. Objectives: to characterize the prevalence, associations, management, and outcomes of supraventricular tachycardia in neonates with congenital diaphragmatic hernia. Design, retrospective chart and cardiology code review within a cohort of patients with congenital diaphragmatic hernia was used to define a subpopulation with atrial arrhythmia. Supraventricular tachycardia mechanisms were confirmed by electrocardiogram analysis. Cox proportional hazard regression identified risk factors for supraventricular tachycardia and association with clinical outcomes. Setting, medical surgical intensive care unit in a single tertiary center, Boston Children's Hospital. Patients, eligible patients included neonates presenting with classic botulic posterolateral congenital diaphragmatic hernia between 2005 and 2017, excluding newborns with Morgagni hernia or late diagnoses of congenital diaphragmatic hernia defined as over 28 days old. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Supraventricular tachycardia, or SVT, arose in 25 of 232 neonates with congenital diaphragmatic hernia, or 11%. 14 of 25 infants, or 56%, had recurrent SVT. Atrioventricular node-dependent tachycardia was the most frequent mechanism, with 32% having this type. The majority, or 71%, of SVT episodes received intervention. 9 patients, or 36%, received preventive antiarrhythmic medications. SVT was associated with lower Apgar score at 1 minute, structural heart disease, larger defect size, extracorporeal membrane oxygenation support, and prostaglandin therapy for ductal patency, as well as hospital stay greater than or equal to 8 weeks and use of supplemental oxygen at discharge. Conclusions. Supraventricular tachycardia can occur in neonates with congenital diaphragmatic hernia and frequently requires treatment. Odds of occurrence are increased with greater congenital diaphragmatic hernia disease severity, extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, and prostaglandin use. In unadjusted logistic regression analysis, SVT was associated with adverse hospital outcomes, underscoring the importance of recognition and management in this vulnerable population. Abstract 11. Assessing the impact of nasotracheal intubation on postoperative neonates with congenital heart disease, a quality improvement project at a single heart center, by Jennifer Marietta et al. Objectives. Nasotracheal intubation is associated with fewer unplanned extubations and improved oral motor skills compared with orotracheal intubation. Our study aimed to implement a practice change from orotracheal intubation to nasotracheal intubation for neonatal cardiac surgery and assess impact on postoperative outcomes. Design, a single-center prospective quality improvement study. Setting, Academic Children's Hospital. Patients, 130 neonates undergoing cardiac surgery with cardiopulmonary bypass. Interventions, nasotracheal intubation during index cardiac surgery. Measurements and main results. Data were collected between January 2019 and April 2021. The study was implemented in 3 phases. Retrospective phase included 43 neonates with orotracheal intubation. Phase 1 assessed safety and feasibility of nasotracheal intubation with an N of 17, and Phase 2 looked at speech-language pathology evaluation on postoperative day 1 facilitated by nasotracheal intubation with an N of 70. Retrospective and Phase 1 patients were combined for analysis. Groups were compared using Kruskal-Wallis test or Wilcoxon rank sum test. 91% of eligible neonates were nasotracheally intubated. There were no clinically significant complications. Days to first speech-language pathology encounter decreased from a median of 4.5 days with an interquartile range of 3.8 to 6.2 to 1.1 days with an interquartile range of 1 to 1.9 and a p-value less than 0.001. Oral readiness time decreased from a median of 6.6 days with an interquartile range of 5.4 to 8.9 to 4.3 days with an interquartile range of 3.4 to 8.6 and a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions. Nasotracheal intubation is feasible and safe in neonatal cardiac surgery. System-level engagement with stakeholders is necessary to change clinical practice. Nasotracheal intubation facilitates early speech-language pathology evaluation and treatment and significantly affects oral readiness after neonatal cardiac surgery. Abstract 12. Inferior and superior vena cava saturation monitoring after neonatal cardiac surgery by Mark Law et al. Objectives. superior vena cava or SVC oxygen saturation monitoring is well described for early detection of hemodynamic deterioration after neonatal cardiac surgery, but inferior vena cava or IVC oxygen saturation monitoring data are limited. Design: retrospective cohort study of 118 neonates with congenital heart disease, including 52 single ventricles from February 2008 to January 2014. Setting: pediatric cardiac intensive care unit. Patients: neonates less than 30 days old with concurrent admission IVC oxygen saturation and SVC oxygen saturation measurements after cardiac surgery with cardiopulmonary bypass. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The primary aim was to correlate admission IVC oxygen saturation and SVC oxygen saturation. Secondary aims included correlate flank or cerebral near-infrared spectroscopy with IVC oxygen saturation and SVC oxygen saturation respectively, and exploratory analysis to evaluate associations between oximetry data and a composite adverse outcome defined as any of the following: increasing serum lactate or vasoactive support at 2 hours post-admission, cardiac arrest, or mortality. Admission IVC oxygen saturation and SVC oxygen saturation correlated, with an R value equal to 0.54 and P value less than 0.001. However, IVC oxygen saturation measurements were significantly lower than paired SVC oxygen saturation, with a mean difference of -6% and 95% confidence interval of -8% to -4%, with a p-value less than 0.001, with wide variability in sample agreement. Logistic regression showed that each 12% decrease in IVC oxygen saturation was associated with a 12-fold greater odds of the composite adverse outcome, with an odds ratio of 12 and 95% confidence interval of 3.9 to 34 and a p-value less than 0.001. We failed to find an association between SVC oxygen saturation and increased odds of the composite adverse outcome, with an odds ratio of 1.8 and 95% confidence interval of 0.99 to 3.3, with a p-value of 0.053. In an exploratory analysis, the area under the receiver operating curve for IVC oxygen saturation and SVC oxygen saturation and the composite adverse outcome was 0.85 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.77 to 0.92 and 0.63 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.52 to 0.73, respectively. Admission IVC oxygen saturation had strong correlation with concurrent flank near-infrared spectroscopy value, with an R equal to 0.74 and p-value less than 0.001. SVC oxygen saturation had a weak association with cerebral near-infrared spectroscopy, with an R equal to 0.22 and p-value equal to 0.02. Conclusions: in postoperative neonates, admission IVC oxygen saturation and SVC oxygen saturation correlate. Lower admission IVC oxygen saturation may identify a cohort of post-surgical neonates at risk for low cardiac output and associated morbidity. Abstract 13. Association between continuous kidney replacement therapy clearance and outcome in pediatric patients with hyperammonemia not due to inborn error of metabolism, by Michelle Starr et al. Objectives: to describe a single center experience of pediatric patients with hyperammonemia not due to inborn errors of metabolism and determine the association between use of continuous kidney replacement therapy or CKRT treatment and outcomes. Design: retrospective cohort study. Setting: tertiary care children's hospital. Patients: all children less than 21 years old admitted to the hospital with hyperammonemia defined as an elevated ammonia level over 100 micromoles per liter not due to inborn error of metabolism. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 135 children with hyperammonemia, the most common reason for admission was infection in 57 or 42%, congenital heart disease in 20 or 14%, and bone marrow transplantation in 10 or 7%. Overall mortality was 61% in 82 of 135 children, which increased with degree of hyperammonemia, including 17 of 23 or 74% with an ammonia level over 250 micromoles per liter experiencing mortality. After multivariable regression, hyperammonemia severity was not associated with mortality. Adjusted odds ratio was 1.4 with 95% confidence interval 0.92 to 2.1 and p-value equal to 0.11. Of the 43 patients, or 32%, receiving continuous kidney replacement therapy, 21 were prescribed standard clearance and 22 high clearance. The most common indications for continuous kidney replacement therapy were fluid overload in 17 of 43, or 42%, and acute kidney injury or uremia in 16 of 43, or 37%. Mean continuous kidney replacement therapy duration was 13 days. There was no difference between standard and high clearance groups in risk of death, 76% versus 86%, and a p-value equal to 0.39. No difference between standard and high clearance groups with cerebral edema on CT scan, 19% versus 27%, and a p-value equal to 0.52. And no difference between standard and high clearance groups with decrease in ammonia levels after 24 or 48 hours of continuous kidney replacement therapy, with a p-value equal to 0.2 and a p-value equal to 0.94. Among those receiving continuous kidney replacement therapy, we failed to find an association between high clearance and decreased risk of death in multivariable analysis, with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.2 and 95% confidence interval of 0.64 to 2.3, with a p-value equal to 0.55. Conclusions: in our single-center retrospective study, we failed to find an association between clearance on continuous kidney replacement therapy and improved survival, nor decreased cerebral edema on head imaging. In fact, we failed to find an association between ammonia level and mortality after controlling for illness severity. Abstract 14, Multisystem Inflammatory Syndrome in Children and Acute Kidney Injury, Retrospective Study of 5 Italian PICUs, by Zaccaria Ricci et al. Objectives: Multisystem Inflammatory Syndrome in Children, or MISC, manifests with heart dysfunction and respiratory failure some weeks after a severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus disease infection. The aim of our study was to explore the prevalence, severity, timing, and duration of acute kidney injury in MISC patients. Furthermore, we evaluated which clinical variables and outcomes are associated with acute kidney injury. Design: multicenter retrospective study. Setting: 5 tertiary hospital PICUs in Italy. Data were collected in the first 7 days of PICU admission, and renal function was followed throughout the hospital stay. Patients: patients less than 18 years old admitted to the PICU for greater than 24 hours with MISC. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: we collected the following data, including demographic information, inflammatory biomarkers, lactate levels, PaO2-FiO2 ratios, ejection fraction, N-terminal pro-B type natriuretic peptide, renal function including serum creatinine, urinary output, fluid balance, and percentage fluid accumulation, vasoactive inotropic score, pediatric sequential organ failure assessment, and pediatric index of mortality 3. Acute kidney injury was diagnosed in 8 of 38 patients, or 21%, and severe acute kidney injury was present in 4 of 8 patients. In all cases, acute kidney injury was present at PICU admission, and its median duration was 3.5 days with an interquartile range of 1.5 to 5.7 days. We did not identify differences between patients with acute kidney injury and without acute kidney injury when not correcting for multiple comparisons, for example, in weight, ejection fraction, pediatric sequential organ failure assessment, PaO2-FiO2 ratio, and lactates. We failed to identify any difference in these groups in urine output and fluid balance. Exploratory analyses of serial data between patients with and without acute kidney injury showed significant differences in lymphocyte count, N-terminal pro-B type natriuretic peptide value, ejection fraction, pediatric sequential organ failure assessment, PaO2-FiO2 ratios, and vasoactive inotropic score. Conclusions: in this multicenter Italian PICU experience, MISC is associated with acute kidney injury in 1 in 5 cases. In general, acute kidney injury is characterized by an associated reduction in glomerular filtration rate with a self-limiting time course. Abstract 15, Risk Factors for Sepsis-Associated Acute Kidney Injury in the PICU, a Retrospective Cohort Study, by Emily Ninmer et al. Objectives: acute kidney injury, particularly of greater severity and longer duration, is associated with increased morbidity and mortality in the pediatric population. Acute kidney injury frequently occurs during sepsis, yet the knowledge of risk factors for sepsis-associated acute kidney injury in the PICU is limited. We aimed to identify risk factors for acute kidney injury that develops or persists after 72 hours from sepsis recognition in pediatric patients with severe sepsis. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, PICU at an academic tertiary care center. Patients, children greater than 1 month old and less than or equal to 18 years old with severe sepsis in the combined cardiac and medical surgical PICU between December 1, 2013 and December 31, 2020 at the University of Virginia Children's Hospital. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The cohort included 124 patients with severe sepsis, with 33 patients or 27% who were post-cardiac surgery with cardiopulmonary bypass. Acute kidney injury was defined by the Kidney Disease Improving Global Outcomes criteria. The primary outcome was severe acute kidney injury, defined as stage 2 or 3 acute kidney injury present at any point between days 3 and 7 after sepsis recognition. Severe acute kidney injury was present in 25 patients or 20%. Factors independently associated with severe acute kidney injury were maximum vasoactive inotropic score within 48 hours after sepsis recognition and fluid overload. The presence of severe acute kidney injury was associated with increased in-hospital mortality. Conclusions. In children with severe sepsis, the degree of hemodynamic support as measured by the vasoactive inotropic score and the presence of fluid overload may identify patients at increased risk of developing severe acute kidney injury. This concludes the abstracts for the July 2022 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.